there, Slash Survivor Girls. Welcome back to another edition of the Creepy Real Horror Cast. I'm your host, Meg.
I'm that good buddy Lunchbox. Freshly off of being sick, so I kind of got that sweet, deep voice.
You got that smooth Barry White thing going for
you. Oh, baby. You just calm down, ladies. It's okay.
There's nary a dry seat in the house.
Oh my god, I'm wet as a doorknob. I don't know what that means, but I said it. It's happening.
It's too late. Keep it in. Don't edit that out.
Why? I said it.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, nope. Freshly coming off of being sick, so hey.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. Good times.
So, welcome back, and if you're joining us for the first time, buckle up.
This is it. Good luck. You're going to do great.
Yeah, right. Join us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, at CreepinItReal. You can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com if you have a movie idea, or if, you know, you just want to bug Lunchbox a little bit.
Yeah, I'll chat with anybody.
And we could see the holidays on the horizon, and I do this every year. But we have merch, and it makes an excellent gift for the podcast and or horror lover in your life. creepitreal.redbubble.com and hit up the sweet ass merch.
Ooh, all done by me.
It's all, yep. Yeah. One of a unique design. Oh, not really one of a kind, because they can get printed on anything. It's Redbubble, but
hey,
your unique designs are done by Mr. Lunchbox.
Oh yeah.
And so the zombie train keeps on a rolling. This week we are doing Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. So we went from Dawn, which, fun.
To was it, though?
Well, for you. For me, it was, yeah, you know, good stuff.
Mm, indeed.
The saucy look that she just gave was just, oh, so good. But yes, now we are into Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is a good one. I'm excited for this conversation.
Are you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Fantastic.
Oh, no, I know, because it's hilarious getting the two different points of views on this, because you're not a zombie person. I am. So it's a fun conversation. So again, this, we might have another Shining episode scenario on our hands if
we keep going. We got us a slobber knocker, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my god, he broke it in half.
Day of the Dead, mind you, not the Sugar Skull variety, was released on July 19th, 1985, was made for a budget of about $3.5 million. It looks like it only grossed about $5 million worldwide. Unfortunately, this had the honor, of being released the same year as Return of the Living Dead.
That was a weird choice.
And it, I don't think that was on purpose, but I think there was some confusion and some issues there that didn't end up, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
It was written and directed by George Romero. Day of the Dead stars Lori Cardale as Sarah, Tara Alexander as John, Joseph Pilato as Rhodes, Jarlath Conroy as McDermott, Anthony DeLeo Jr. as Miguel, Richard Liberty as Logan, a.k.a. Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, I suppose, Sherman Howard as Bub, Gary Howard Klar as Steele, Ralph Marrero as Rickles, John Amplis as Ted Fisher, or Dr. Fisher, Tasso Stavrakis as Torres, Greg Nicotero as Johnson, and a whole mess of zombie extras. So, how does one play Army Men versus Zombies?
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much that's exactly how that works out.
So, we are several... I think it's several months, but we might even be several years removed from the initial zombie outbreak. The humans are now in the minority. A group of scientists are studying zombies. One of them is under the impression that they're looking for a way to reverse or fix the zombieism. The other one is just trying to smooth out the bumps, and he's thinking he can domesticate them like a house cat or a plant. And with mixed results, I think we should be able to say. And a group of ragtag army guys are assigned to protect the scientists from the zombies. So they're supposed to be the muscle on deck.
Yeah, the group of scientists, it seems like they were brought in from Washington, because they continuously, make reference or note that it's, there's got to be other scientists in Washington. Like, we got to be able to contact somebody. Somebody knows that we're here, meaning that they were sent by the government issues.
Hence which means why, there are enough people left who have a government.
If that was the case,
well, yeah. The army was getting, Major Cooper, who was Rhodes' precursor, he had received orders. He had been up to that point receiving orders from Washington.
Yeah.
In regards to what to do with the scientists and blah, blah, blah. So we had an active military, and we still had enough people alive to have some skeleton of a government anyway.
So, but because it's been so long and it's just, they can't find anybody, the McDermott, like, he's the radio guy or electrician, and he cannot contact any, he's like, I haven't been able to contact anybody for months.
Yeah, and they're hidden in an underground base in Florida.
And they're, it's, the equipment that he's using is, like, old, like, World War II radio, so it's not very strong or reliable, and it's just very, very touch and go, because he just doesn't have the equipment. And that seems to be another little running gag, is just everyone complains that they don't have the equipment in order to do what they need to do. And that just really sets off the other side of that table. Because it's just like, they're like, well, what the fuck are we doing here? Mm-hmm. It's like, if you guys don't have the shit you need, then what the, why are we all just playing around down here? Let's just go. The thing that I do like about this movie is, compared to, Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead, it seemed like everybody was in the same boat. They were all working for the same, because they were so isolated in this house. There's only one guy that was just the complete douche nozzle that kind of ruined the whole thing for everybody. But everyone was on the same team. Then you get into Dawn of the Dead, and
you get to see everyone get fracture.
You get four people that at the beginning are kind of button heads a little bit, but then because they're living together in a area, they start to work together, and it's fine. But then you get the bikers that come in and fuck shit up. So this, I like that we're now getting this turmoil of how society kind of plays out. I mean, we see it in every political debate, and every time, there's a new voting cycle come through, it's like you could always see...
Yeah, every 2 years.
You see the blue versus the red, and then you got some of those people that are just stuck in the middle, just watching the fight. And that's...
And the end result is... It's poop again.
Yeah, and well...
Every time.
And that's the thing is, the one thing that, like I said, like about this is seeing that inner turmoil, because these people are stuck in an underground cave, cannot go anywhere, and yet it's just, they have to either work together or it's just going to fall apart. And because it's just, it's a huge area that they're in, but because they're basically trapped underground, it just feels like it's got that claustrophobic,
there's a built-in
case.
There's built-in claustrophobia there,
or it's like cabin fever kind of deal.
A little bit, yeah. Because they're sort of forced to stay indoors, underground. They have the entire perimeter of the compound is fenced off, but the zombies seem to keep wanting to congregate, like they know where the door is. This is Romero sort of entertaining the... Not sort of. This is Romero entertaining the idea of the... zombies, their brain power coming back. So in the last two films, we had just shuffling, id-driven zombies. They bite and bite and bite and bite and bite.
Bite, 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 bite.
Yeah. So they're essentially just rabid animals, is kind of what we're dealing with. They have no driver except to attack, to bite, to eat. in Day of the Dead, with Frankenstein especially, but the scientists in general, they're toying with this idea that maybe there's more than meets the eye with these creatures, because they were human once. So let's see if we can unlock what, like, unlock that humanity and at least make them, if not fully useful, at least sort of neuter them so that they're not, I mean, mentally, not literally, but neuter them so that they're not really a threat anymore.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, where it's that they're, he's bringing up this whole idea of domesticating zombies, or, you know, making them behave like good little girls and boys. Mm. The idea for that was actually introduced in Dawn. The line that Flyboy gives to, what's her name?
Bran?
Yeah. When he gives the line, when they're up on top of the mall looking down and she's like, why are they here? He's like, it's just, it's their basic instinct. This was a very important place in their life, and this is just kind of where they're just driven
to. Yeah, they would think to go here.
And that little idea is the spawn of what is to, for what Dr. Logan was, because he's like, they remember how to do things. It's just because of their, you know, dead, yeah, their body is basically, there's no use for it. There's no use for their stomach. There's no use for any of their organs. He's like, they're just running on brain function. Mm-hmm. So it's, they understand what to do. So it's like, if we can, you know, reward them and make them do what we want, it's, we can get them to cooperate and be a part of our society. He's like, that's the only way that we're going to survive, is by having them not want to eat us. It's like, we got to understand that they can do things and treat them as such, but it's like, we got to also kind of teach them, because now they're basically being reborn in this whole world, but they're rotting at the same time. So it's a weird,
they have this flip, weird, yeah, odd thing going for, one of, for them.
And another thing that I love about that is what they did in Shaun of the Dead. Because they did exactly that, where they domesticated all the zombies and the world became civil again.
Normal-ish again, yeah.
It was just like where you see the some of the zombie workers from the electronic shop. Like they're pushing shopping carts and they're doing like the old, like, you know, talk shows and stuff like that. And it's just like, nope. It's, all that stuff was great. And then, like, seeing Sean go into the shed and he's playing video games with Ed. Ed tries to bite him, but then he just kind of gives, yeah, him shit, and then they just turn around and player two has entered the game. And
yeah, they kind of, like, get back at it.
So I was like, but it has that same feel. And I know that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, they really took from that with, like, with Bub and stuff like that, because but it was one of those things where seeing everything that Logan was doing made sense for when it came to Sean, because that's exactly what he wanted, and, yeah, it, and that became
and,
a,
well,
a thing.
And Sean borrowed a lot from, yeah, the original of the Dead trilogy,
a
lot. And because it was part satire, part homage, part romantic comedy with zombies. So
I mean, I would love to eat a Bub's pizza. Did you ever see that? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I was about to say, I was like, we're going to stop this podcast and I'm going to put it on so you can see just that little logo, just Bub's Pizza.
But yeah, yes, they borrowed a lot. Speaking of Bub, I would like to start with the positives, if I can, because I don't have a lot of them.
Good, good.
So, Bub was an absolute delight and a highlight, the highlight of this entire film.
100%.
I like the idea that he's essentially been dumbed down to, like, a toddler or an infant. I really enjoy the experiments that Logan was doing, Frankenstein was doing with him, where he was just sort of introducing just everyday, just boring, nothing objects, but things everybody could recognize, toothbrush, razor, books. those sorts of things. And then slowly kind of working his way up to introducing more complex things. I thought, what was his name? Bob Sherman? No. Sherman Howard, sorry. I thought that he was very charming, even under all the makeup. I kind of liked that they hinted that Bub may have had a military past. I think it was, I don't remember if it was Fisher or Logan, but one of them had said, because when the first time Bub saluted Captain Rhodes, they're like, oh, looks like he knows what to do.
He's saluting an officer. Oh, that was totally Logan. Yeah.
And they're like, wait, let's see what happens. And they put an empty gun in front of him, and he goes to shoot Rhodes without even knowing who Rhodes was or just how awful he was.
Well, no, he was doing that because Rhodes was pointing a gun at him. And that was the thing.
Oh, yeah, no, I bored them. I erased my last comment. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because that was the thing was Rhodes popped in when they were doing the experiments. He's like, what are you doing, Frankenstein? And then when Bub saw
him, Rhodes was impatient.
Oh, well, he's an asshole. It was just like, you can, we'll get into Rhodes a little bit, but it's just like, but yeah, he's an asshole. But it was just the, when Bub did the salute, that's when, yeah, it's like, okay, well, we got a military man. And now Logan's like, oh, now I have a piece of a puzzle with this man, so I could continue on with other experiments or whatever. And that's, yeah, when, like you said, when you gave him the gun, it was interesting to see him.
And he knew to squeeze the trigger.
Yeah, to up, point, two hands.
Yeah.
Like, he held it just like it was normal. And that was, again, going back to what Logan was saying, because even Fisher was like, holy shit, that's incredible that they could do that. And I like that that little piece was also a little bit of a reference to Dawn of the Dead with Flyboy. Because Flyboy still had the gun in his hand. And
he had it hooked on a finger while he was walking around.
Which is so fucking cool. Like, it just, it wouldn't fall off. But it was just, it was one of those things where, or not necessarily Flyboy, because he was just kind of just walking around with it, but the fucking gun zombie in Dawn, where he's just like holding, he's like, I know what this is, holding, and I have rifle, to know. Yeah. He knows that he's, if, yeah, the barrel is that point. But they're not developed enough at that point.
Yeah, this is, yeah. I don't even know. We don't have a timestamp on how much time has gone by between Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. Because I think the time between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead was only a few months.
It was like 3 months.
Yeah. So, but at this point, we're way far removed from that initial outbreak. We're just not given how much. But it's long enough that the brain is starting to, kind of like a circuit breaker. Like, one switch at a time, they seem to be clicking back to the on position.
The zombies that are in the bunker area, where they corral them in to keep them, when Steel is up there screaming for them, trying to get them interested to come out and, you know, come to them, they don't want to. And, you know, Sarah, she's just like, she's actually amazed because she's like, they know. Mm-hmm. They know what's about to happen, and that's a crazy idea to sit there and go, yeah, the zombie just wants you, but they know danger. Mm-hmm. And the thing, same thing with Bub, when Rhodes points the gun at him, he cowers. He knows what the gun is. It's not just a completely mindless zombie that's just going to sit there and just...
Yeah.
You know, moan and groan and raise its hands.
Bub's the highlight, but I think in general how the zombies have been treated as characters in this movie was better. I think they were handled better. I think they're, because they became a bit more complex, they became a lot more interesting, which is good. However, on the flip side of that, the human characters sucked. Why did we spend so much time shouting our lines? Everybody was fucking shouting. And what was Miguel so pissy about? We never got an explanation. He was just
fatigued,
on
fatigue, Meg.
Even after being sedated, he was on the rag.
He needed his sippy cup and appy juice. He needed a nap really, really bad.
He had his nap. He got stabbed in the back with a sedative. Yeah. He had his nappy nap. And
I hated Miguel. I know that that actor was...
I'm like, stop crying.
Yeah, he was trying to be method and do this whole thing where he was separated from the rest of the group, like, during filming, just because he wanted to keep that consistency with his, you know, the character. But the whole time, it was...
Method actors are so pretentious.
I mean, like, there's some method actors that I'm, like, all about, but it was just, like, there's just, in some characters, it just sucked. I didn't like Miguel at all. And the fact that he was the end result of the problem that the rest of the group had, I'm like, what an asshole. It's just, like, he had no reason. And on top of that, he's fucking up the science experiment that is now him. Because he was bitten by a zombie.
Yeah.
And then Sarah, it quickly cut his arm off.
Yeah, above the bite.
Yeah, to try and then they cauterized it. And I was like, would you survive? I want to see if you would survive. Like, because... Would he turn?
Is the question.
Every Romero, there has never been that. They have never tried that, where somebody has tried to cut off a piece of whatever, you know, was bitten.
It really can only work on an appendage, like an arm or a leg.
You can
really only do that.
I mean, you get bit in the neck, you're just kind of screwed.
Yeah, I mean, you're not cutting. We're going to have to cut your head off and see what happens. We're doing it to save you.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. I'm like, you meet him, he's in the helicopter, he's all, like, moody. And Sarah made a comment that they hadn't gotten sleep in at least 24 hours.
And she's actually being nice to him.
Yeah, well, like... that's to her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Or her, at least her lover. And they share a room. But, like, all he did was whine and cry and piss and moan. I'm like, get it together,
soldier. We all know that you're perfect. So what? So what?
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
Yeah, and then he can...
Yeah, it's like, all right, you need to go to your room, put on Simple Plan, and go lie down. You're too much.
Throw on your eyeshadow and just keep flicking that hair.
Right?
Wear your jelly bracelets, you know.
You fucking emo kid. It just, like, I couldn't stand it. And none of the soldiers that had speaking parts, like, I guess Tasso Stavrakis and Greg Nicotero were fine because they didn't really talk much.
Yeah, they were definitely background.
They were just secondary grunts, but like the primary grunts and Captain Rhodes, I get it, they're not supposed to be likable, that's not the point here, but the fact is I cringed so hard whenever I would see them on screen. Their voices were so, the laughing.
The height. I have dubbed Steel and Rickles the Hyena Brothers because that first scene when they're walking through or when they're driving through the caverns and stuff, and all of a sudden the I was like, oh my god, I cringe too. The cringiest part for this, I don't mind Steel. Steel actually fits for that kind of dynamic and character. Rickles was like that annoying little brother.
He looked like a dime store John Belushi.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Exactly.
But the whole thing.
Wish.com John Belushi.
Yeah. The thing that drove me crazy about Rickles is how overly sexualized it is. But understandable because of where they're at and just, you know, his mindset or whatever his personality is, it just kind of gets amped up to 11 because they're in a fucking cave and can't go anywhere. And there's only one fucking woman in this and goddamn...
And she's been claimed.
And she's hot. But that was the thing, was like, just that one scene where they're trying to get the zombies in, he's like, I got something hanging for ya. Okay, fine, like, that's a whatever line. And then Rickles just, like, keeps going. And then Sarah, like, he was like, oh, I don't want to pull it out in front of the lady. I want to get her all worked up and whatever. And just kind of just giving her more shit. But then, like, she gives the most nerdy fucking comeback ever, calling him a fucking, was like, basically a caveman. And then Rickles just going on this whole thing of like, oh, you're a fucking caveman. You're a fucking throwback. But don't worry. Throwback got the biggest fucking dick ever. It's like, oh my.
Calm down, Spanky.
Wow. And it's like, you are really excited about this man's big old Johnson. It's like, back it up. It's like, I know you're isolated, but jeezy creasy. It's like, yeah. But yes.
And the only reason why he hadn't resorted to homosexuality yet is because he was in the Army, not in the Navy.
Yeah, yeah. So the Rickles thing annoyed me, but I like Steel, if that, because Steel felt a little bit more natural, and I like, it's just, I kind of liked his build, and especially like him against Rhodes, where I almost feel like he would definitely be the muscle, and Rhodes basically made Steel do all the dirty work.
You know what I also found out? I got a crash course in a lot of stuff watching this movie. I also found out that Rhodes couldn't just assume command of the team. He had to get specific orders from a higher up, which he had never received. So he's running around going, "It's my men. These are my men." No, no, sir. They are not. They're still under the, they're still under Major Cooper. And even though Cooper's dead, there have been no transfer of powers done anywhere. And, cause as soon as Rhodes said they were my men, Curtis is like, no, they're not. They're really not.
Official form, yes, he would not take. But because they have not gotten any contact from Washington or any of that, like, from to get that, well, you know, passing of the torch.
They had had contact with Washington. It just had,
not until, like, well, after Cooper died, they haven't been able to get anything. They haven't seen anybody from hundreds of miles. All they've seen is just dead walking corpses.
But he just assumed command of the whole thing. And they said that while Cooper was kind of an asshole, like, Rhodes was the next level.
But the crazy thing is that, and if everyone is aware of how that process should work out, everyone agreed. That even the scientists knew. Because there's like, they have no control over what that is going to happen. And Rhodes being, if that was going to be the handoff to the command, he knows that I'm next. And because they can't get anybody, you know, in contact, he's just going to fucking just go for it. But the fact that everyone was just like, yeah, you're it. They listen to him. They follow everything that he says, all of his little orders, all the little directions, even the crazy fucking bullshit that he does. Ordering him, you know, to shoot,
like,
other,
wearing bullets that to a gun that is nowhere to be found.
That has nothing to do with what I literally just said. I know you were like itching to get into it because your boyfriend was really into the whole gun thing.
Okay,
so but I'm talking about the crazy shit where Rhodes takes command and then becomes dictator. It's that. Because of their situation, I can see where he's going. Those are my men in there. That's his team, yeah, whatever it is.
It kind of makes me wonder, because Cooper had died while the scientists were out running around, flying up and down the, pretty much up and down the entire state. But I wonder if Cooper might not have met an unfortunate end.
I would love to know how Cooper died.
At the hands of Rhodes.
Yeah.
There's a big question mark there for me.
There's the one thing that I...
Because Rhodes was a power-hungry fucker, so...
Oh, yeah.
Kind of makes me wonder if maybe it was in a whoopsie-doodle, and then he got bitten by a zombie or something.
This movie is incredible about introducing characters and not...
giving you no information about them whatsoever?
None. You just have to jump in and you go, oh, okay, you're that guy. And you're in it. You're just gone. Because when we first meet Sarah, you get the whole... Like, all we see of her is they do another little shot of the female isolated in a little room or whatever, because they did that in Dawn where it's just boom and then title card. Now we get the zombie hands coming out of the...
CGI.
That wasn't CGI.
Jumping out of the wall?
That wasn't CGI. That was all practical. Every bit of that was practical.
It didn't look good.
Because they had... Yeah, because it was coming out of the, like a weird like paper... Like kind of like a gel wall kind of thing. So, but there's like a zombie that was talking about how... Yeah, it was popping out of the wall.
I don't know. It looked like bad CGI.
Nope.
So.
All practical. Mm-hmm. So... But then when, like, she wakes up from the bad dream, we're automatically in the helicopter, and she just starts talking to McDermott and John, And it was like, we just have to understand, like, okay, you're the helicopter pilot, you're the, you know, the tech or whatever, and it's just like, you're just, boom. Same thing with Miguel. It's like, okay, we understand you're, like, we kind of get a little bit more as that story goes on. But then when we get into Logan, we just see him.
He's one-dimensional.
Frankenstein, right?
Yeah, he's doing a scientist.
Rhodes, he's screaming at Dr. Fisher when we first meet him. So we have to automatically go, okay, military, asshole, scientist, smarty pants. Like, that's like, we had to like jump in that way instead of it being like an easy, like, okay, here's Captain Rhodes. And kind
of. Well, that's how we're introduced to them. Yeah. It's just a bunch of screaming, and it's really jarring, and I really don't think it's terribly effective, and it kind of forced me to tune out.
That didn't bother me one bit. The one thing that I did notice was the amount of F-bombs dropped. It was like a fucking Limp Bizkit song. I guess Romero also made during the editing, he was just like, I don't think we left enough, you know, F-bombs for the rest of the world. It's just like, that was like the one go-to just word that they used constantly. But Romero's like, just do whatever feels like natural. If you want to, you know, emphasize a little bit more, then go for it. And that just tended to be the word. And it was just fuck this, fuck that, blah, 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 blah. Like, it just kept on going.
And I am by no means a prude, nor am I conservative with the language, but at some point, please stop. Like, you've already more than illustrated every use of the word. We get it. It's starting to lose all meaning at this point. And most of those outside of our core three people, Sarah McDermott and John?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else were basically one-dimensional cartoon characters.
Yeah.
In this movie. And I really don't like that. I really don't. And Sarah, as far as Sarah goes, the dream sequences, because it happened a few times in the movie, I fucking hated them. They were roads to nowhere. They didn't give us insight on anything. They didn't, like she was haunted by a calendar. That was what I got out of that first dream sequence. Like, what the fuck?
Haunted by a calendar.
She's in an empty brick room with a calendar pinned to the wall. Are you haunted by this calendar? What the fuck?
No, she's haunted because she's locked into a concrete prison. And you can see the time lapse over it. And also when the zombie hands, it's just because the zombies are coming at, like, it, she's, it's, there's, it's a lot of, like, I guess, not symbolism, but, like, I don't know what the word is. But it's an imagery of what she's dealing with, because
it's foreshadow and telegraphing mostly.
Yeah, and because like that's the start of the movie. At the end of the movie, when John McDermott and Sarah are running back to the helicopter, and she opens the door, and the zombie hands come at her, and then she wakes up on the island. That is a little bit of an irritating situation, because it's like, so you're dreaming about running away, or like that time that you were there.
So then it makes me wonder, was the whole movie a bad dream? Why would you that's how you avoid writing an ending. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I don't particularly like that little zombie hand coming out and then them showing up on the island. I like them on the island, because that was the idea. But
the only one that you could attribute to having any meaning really whatsoever is the middle one, where she's kind of, she gets that image of Miguel merged with the image of the zombie sitting up and his guts spilling out on the table. Like, she's kind of very, in a very heavy-handed way, foreshadowing Miguel's death at the end of the movie. That's really all, the only of, I think it was the three of them, just the three.
Yeah.
But that was really the only one you could point to and go, oh, okay, I guess there's, like, when you get to the end of the movie, I guess it meant something. But, like, the dream sequence thing at the end of the film, all that achieved, like, all that succeeded in doing was erasing the rest of the movie we just watched. Because now you put a question mark over the whole thing of, well, did she dream the whole fucking thing? Why would you do that?
I mean, for me, it's like, I just say, it's like, oh, she just had to dream about what happened. But I don't think the whole movie was just not there. But it's just one of those, like, yeah, I can understand where if it doesn't feel like it's, you don't know.
But that's what that dream sequence does. Yeah. I mean, whether that's the case or not is not the point, but that's what it does, is it renders the rest of the movie moot. And then you're just sitting there going, it's like the Dynasty ending.
Yeah.
You know, you go through this whole thing and Patrick Duffy's alive and taking a shower and the whole thing was just a dream. And it was like, okay. So, for those of us that are old enough to remember Dynasty from the 80s. Yeah. But anyway, so that whole thing, like, I hated the dream sequences. Like, it was so unnecessary. And I just don't think they were, I could kind of see what he was trying to do. I just don't think he did it particularly well.
The first one was fine for me because it was quick and easy. The second one was awesome because of Miguel. And then the third one was just irritating. It was just one of those things where if she kind of just let the dreams just happen and then nothing else. Like, there was no talking to Dr. Logan about her dreams or any of that.
Yeah, were just brushed off as soon as she woke up. It's like they never happened.
So, I mean, if we never had those dream sequences, wouldn't it have affected the character of Sarah at all? So, I mean, it was just kind of like she had the dream, went, oh, I'm awake. Oh, back to work. And then did her thing.
Like, were they just there for the benefit of the audience somehow? Because they weren't doing anything to move the character development around.
Yeah.
Along. It's like, okay.
I mean, it's like, yeah, we already know that it's like everyone is dealing with this crazy-ass shit where the world is falling apart. The world is inside the cavern is falling apart. And everyone is losing their goddamn minds. There's lack of sleep. There's lack of manpower. There's lack of equipment. They're trying to save the world or help the world. And you could just see where they're just hitting their heads up against a brick wall.
And I can see that, how that would be a thing. And, like, Miguel was supposed to be the character, and while I thought his whole situation was really fucking stupid because we didn't actually get any information as to why he was the way he was, as I mentioned before, but the fact that he was so down in the dumps of despair, thinking that, fuck it, it's game over, there was really no point in going on, that kind of thing, he decided that not only is he just going to die, he's going to take everyone, the other survivors, down with him. And he decided to just make a unilateral decision for everybody in that bunker. No, sir. You are an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, like, there's just so much decision-making that happened with character actions and stuff like that that I just don't get. Like, it was the Miguel thing when he decided to, all right, I'm going to take myself down and take everyone else down with me. I feel like that was just a shot to get all of these zombies in one frame. And yeah, it was a great way to kick off the carnage. And, you know, this is Tom Savini with, like, peak powers. He and his team did a fantastic, which later on, most of them would go on to start K&B. But they did a fantastic job of developing all of the makeup and special effects for these last sequences with the Horde. And it's just like, there's got to be a better way to do this. Like, why couldn't the zombies just break down the fence themselves or something? Because you could tell they were trying to get in. Why did it have to turn into Miguel just feeling like, well, we're the last ones, let's just all kill ourselves and call it a day? I wasn't particularly fond of that particular thought process. I'm pretty sure I just said that multiple times and it was very redundant there because I'm a little tired. But I didn't mean to say particular so many times, guys.
Yeah. In particular, I would actually say that the having Miguel do what he initially did, for me, was fine. Because the idea of them trying to isolate themselves and, you know, being in this bunker, having essentially a corral of test zombies that the soldiers have brought down, you know, put in there so whenever Frankenstein needed them, they just got them out. If you put just this massive amount of zombies in at one time, it kind of kills the whole mood of dealing with these people. Mm-hmm. It's just like any other, like, Walking Dead series. It's like, yeah, you need some zombies, but the whole idea is these people dealing with the turmoil of these people. And not every other scene in The Walking Dead is going to have just a massive amount of zombies unless you put your characters into that predicament. So Miguel, I don't understand if he was just trying to get back at Sarah for
cutting his arm off
for what she did, because the whole time Miguel, it drove me crazy because at the beginning he was pissed at her because she thought that he needed rest. And he's like, "Oh, you're just a perfect person, and we all know that, you know, you're okay." Yeah, like, and he's just whining, bitching, and moaning. And then when he gets down into the zombie pit for the first time, Sarah tries to say, "No, he's not fit. He can't do this. You need to take him off." He's just like, "I'm fucking fine," and he pisses and moans, gets in the cart, and then he ends up, when they start doing the corralling, he ends up dropping the stick, and Rickles almost gets bitten.
And at the end, Miguel was supposed to be zombie wrangling, and one of them broke out of the collar.
Oh, and I mean, that wasn't his fault. I mean, it literally ripped through the collar, so there was nothing he could do. But that first time when it drops, and it almost gets Rickles, Steel grabs Miguel and holds him over one of the zombies, and calling them racial slurs,
yeah.
And just, you know, and then Sarah says, "I'm going to cut you in half if you don't let him go." And then he throws fucking Miguel. Well, Miguel gets pissed at Sarah. He slaps the shit out of her, and then he, like,
which was so uncalled for.
Yeah, he gets or like so she goes tries to get him a sedative because he needs sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets pissed off, says, "I don't want that shit," and he throws the needle, and then he ends up slapping the shit out of her, and then he gets all upset, and then she jabs him with the needle, and he goes, takes night-night. Well, when, out of nowhere, like, I guess she later on goes to bed, she wakes up from a dream, and then sees Miguel across the way, and he's like, "Oh, you're afraid, too." He's like, "Oh, you're full of shit, Sarah." Like, and he gets all, like, mad at her for fucking what?
Yeah, he needed to go back to sleep.
It's
again.
Just absolutely ridiculous as to, and then, like, she kicks him out. But then, like, later on, it's like, we get into that whole shit. So I almost feel like he just constantly had this thing against Sarah. And for me personally, everyone said that, like, "Oh, like, yeah, they're sleeping together or whatever." I don't feel a relationship between them at all.
Oh God, no! There was no sexual tension. There was no romantic tension. She felt like his babysitter.
Yeah.
More than anything else.
That, like, was annoying.
We don't get if they shoehorned. Oh God. In Dawn of the Dead, Fran and Flyboy at least felt kind of organic. Here they shoehorned this relationship in to just continue the trend of there being some kind of romantic relationship in these movies. But what Romero forgot to do was build the romance between the two of them.
Or at least let the audience know as to maybe a why and how. Because it's like, it's again, one of those things where they just throw you into a situation. And you have to understand it.
There is nothing wrong with being thrown into a situation. Like, a lot of really good stories start in medias res. Like, that's not a bad thing, but you have to kind of, once you do that and you hook your audience, you kind of have to take a few steps back, build a few things, like throw a few bricks down so people understand what they're watching, and then you can continue on. So if we're expected to believe that Sarah and Miguel had this romantic type of relationship, because the rest of the squad around them, the soldiers were picking on him, and, oh, every time Sarah was in a room, oh, your boyfriend this, or I'll fuck you that, and it was like, okay, so clearly they're miffed that of all of those wonderfully charming individuals in that room, she chose Miguel. We can't, and for the life of us as an audience, we can't figure out why. Because if it were me, if you were to ask me, I would have gone for either Tasso or Greg Nicotero.
Hell yeah.
Like, I'd have gone for either of those two. Because, not for nothing, but Tasso's cute for a Greek boy.
Tasso looked a lot like, was the dude from Bee Gees?
Yeah, he had that, like, Maurice Gibb hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was going pretty hard. He had luscious, flowing
And the
looks.
Beard, man, like, yeah.
But, like, that would not have been, for me, personally, but we don't get what made Miguel so attractive. He's, when we meet him, he's unkempt, he's kind of wild, he hasn't slept, he's clearly unhinged in some way, but we don't get even glimpses of what he was like prior to being so sleep-deprived he could barely function.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Miguel, the Miguel and Sarah thing just didn't make any goddamn sense.
Nope.
But that was the thing, was when we got into the whole deal with, as I mentioned, where you have your one side fighting the other side, but then you have the guys watching the fight happen. My two favorite non-zombie characters in this film is John and McDermott. Just because they are not military people. They're not scientists.
And they're the most natural of anybody else in this movie.
And they don't give a shit about what either of them wants to do. They only care about themselves. Mm-hmm. And the...
And drinking. McDermott was really heavy into the brandy. He was a proper Irish lad. Through and through.
Oh, yeah. Oh, meats and potatoes. But John, I love that... there was a little bit of a character arc with
him.
He
softened.
He did. Because there was... The one thing that I loved about them was the Ritz.
So, I know, they did that to the trailer. It was cute.
So I was like, how fucking cool is that? Where they found an isolated part of this long-ass cavern. And it was actually an old... missile silo, and it was a government cavern that where they used to store a lot of government records. There was like a surplus of old, like government government cheese, mm-hmm. and just tons and tons of shit that was just down there. And so when they were filming, they kind of took that same concept. And then let John play with it. So they had everything there from like RVs and just household items, mm-hmm. and all that good shit. And so they built themselves a home, yeah. out on the outskirts where it was away from all the military assholes.
Which honestly was like, you know, I could see that that's the best thing to do because they have their own private space. They built a backyard.
Yeah. Like, that was the best thing
ever.
It
was so cute. They had their stupid little plastic patio set out there, and like that's where John would go to kick up his feet with a drink and read a book at the end of the day.
They put up a giant poster of like a beach scene. I was like, well, first off, I was like, how did that shit get down there?
It's like, yeah, right? Where'd you find that? They were probably out on a mission somewhere, and he saw it and went, ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
And took it home.
Yeah, I love that they had their own little oasis, and... When
they're home away from home,
and when they introduce, like, the crazy thing is, Sarah has never been there.
Nope.
Out of all the times that they, I guess, interact with John and McDermott, she has never actually ventured off to their home.
Well, why would she? I mean, she would just go home with Miguel every night.
Yeah,
there was no reason for her to.
And she was always in that just that sterile white concrete.
Yeah.
You know, just. There's nothing. And then when she gets over there,
she finally gets into something that kind of feels homey and normal. And I think that's the biggest thing that John and McDermott were trying to keep was this sense of normalcy. And which I think is super, super important considering the way that they had to live.
The one of the really good scenes between Sarah and John that kind of starts setting everything up is they're actually out on patrol. Mm-hmm. They're out in Miami. They're flying around, and Sarah goes, "Okay, set down. We got to see if there's anybody out here." Mm-hmm. And John goes, "Well, I'm going to keep the engine running, but if you know there's trouble, I'm taking it up, and you're going to have a really sour day. Like, it's going to be really bad." Mm-hmm. Well, then when they get back to the base, Sarah gets all pissed off at John because he's like, "Oh, go ahead and fill up the helicopter." And she's like, "No, the zombies are getting too riled up. Wait till nightfall." And he's like, "Who the fuck cares?" It's like, well, they know we're here. Just do it. And that's like, if there's a problem, then we're gone.
Should have listened to John, because they had barely enough fuel to get up and out of that compound at the end of the movie. Or at least that's what we're led to believe.
Unless they did fill it up at the end, at night, like Sarah said.
Well, we don't know how. But we were led to believe, because this is over the course of a couple of days, but like, we were led to believe that they completely forgot about it right up until the end when they're running for the helicopter. And John's was it John or McDermott? One of them was like, "We didn't put gas in this."
No, they were like, "Hopefully the boys remember to put gas in it." And like, referring back to that.
I think Sarah had an oh shit moment of, oh yeah, that was a thing.
But the line that I was saying was really good between them was, Sarah got all pissed off at John, saying like, "Why don't, like, I don't see you guys lifting a finger or whatever." And
well, they have no desire to help around there. It's not their job.
Well, no, he was going, he's like, "The reason I don't do that is because I don't believe in what you're doing. I think it's all a waste of time." Mm-hmm. He's like, "What we need to do is get in that whirly bird over there and then go to an island somewhere, get drunk, and just waste away the last bit of our days." And she's like, "Oh, you could do that, you know, couldn't you?" And he's like,
"Yeah."
And she's like, you could do that with everything going on. You could do that right now. And he's like, "I could do that if this wasn't going on." And he's like, "I don't give a shit about anything or anybody. I just want to live the rest of my life peaceful, isolated, not with a care in the world." And it's just that kind of mentality that continues on. And then when they get down into the Ritz, and
I still love that color.
And Sarah's like, "I just want to get drunk and just forget about all, you know, just pass out, go to sleep, whatever." And John starts to, Sarah starts to get back on that whole thing of, "Why don't you help?" or "Why don't you do anything?" And then John starts to explain about how down in this cavern there's all these records of the Fortune 500, you know, top Fortune 500 companies, and all their makings, all their earnings, all the floods, natural disasters, and it's just all these records and numbers and papers and everything.
And for what?
Yeah, he's like, "What does it matter?" He's like, "Are we gonna, you know, dig up all this information when all this is, you know, all said and done? And are we going to remember everything that these companies did or what you're doing?" He's like, "Because all you're doing right now is just numbers and charts, and you're adding to this pile."
Right.
He's like, you're just making
more paper.
Yeah, he's like, "You're never going to figure out the problem." He's like, "I'm sorry, but it's not, you're wasting your time." He's like, "You can't," he's like, "the idea is that God is furious, and he's actually mad at us and the fact that we're trying to figure his shit out."
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is another little line like what is said in, like, in Dawn of the Dead, where there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk around.
It's similar.
It kind of flows with that, but it's a little bit more of a sinister kind of line where it's like, oh, God's pissed at us because we are getting too big for our britches. Yep. And I love that he said that too. I was like, oh, that's so good. But
it was a good line for sure.
So, and it's just funny hearing that, where it's, yeah, when the world goes to shit like that, it's, what does it matter for the history?
John was very nihilistic. Yeah. He was the most optimistic nihilist I think I've ever seen in
the
movie. Because for him, he was like, none of this fucking matters. Let's just go chill and have a drink and just watch as the world ends, kind of a thing. Because he's like, on one hand, there's nothing we can do about it. And on the other hand, he's like, so let's just hang out and relax and have a good time in the meantime.
Well, then there was that one scene where Sarah's bitching to Fisher about the whole state of everything and how the military boys aren't helping and doing anything else. And then McDermott and John are walking away, and she's like, oh, it would be easier if we all just actually worked together. It's like we're all, you know, separating and splitting apart.
Yeah, the Kumbaya speech was cute.
And in retrospect, yes, that would be the perfect thing. Is like, if everyone actually worked together, yes, you're going to have an easier time. But John's, the line that he gives her is, it's like, well, that's the problem with the world. Everyone's got their own opinions.
Everyone's got their own thing.
No one sees it the same way, and you're never going to get that camaraderie. Like, it's just, you're gonna have the separation.
Yeah, for John, it was fighting an uphill battle, and for him, it just didn't seem to make a difference. Yeah.
So I like that John and McDermott was just kind of the middleman, and seeing where it's, you have Rhodes and the military guys are like, what the fuck are we doing? I'm tired of risking my life for this shit, with not understanding it as to at all what the scientists, you know, eggheads are doing.
And I don't understand if it's because they are willfully ignorant, like they just don't care enough to find out, or if, I mean, don't get me wrong, Frankenstein was doing his best to hide everything he was doing, if for no other reason than the fact that he was also experimenting on soldiers.
Yeah.
So I could see, because he knew what would happen if Rhodes, or, well, I guess his predecessor, Cooper, found out that he was experimenting on dead soldiers. He wouldn't be able to experiment anymore. If they didn't just break his arms and legs, they'd outright kill him. So that, I can see why that would be a secret, but there was no reason for Sarah and Fisher to keep anything, to keep Rhodes in the loop as to what they were doing. Like, was there such a great divide between them that they couldn't be like, all right, so this is what we're, like, I don't know. But then again, we also saw the aftermath, or we saw the fallout of what happened when Rhodes did find out what they were doing, and they tried to explain it, and he just thought the whole thing was stupid anyway.
Yeah. And in those cases, it's like, you're never going to understand, because Rhodes just wants to just kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, just get up, get rid of them. We don't need them. Just, it doesn't fucking matter anymore. They're all dead, so...
Who cares?
Whatever. And that kind of mentality of, for... And any of those other zombie movies that we see where, yeah, there's that one person like, no, but they're still people.
Yeah.
This movie does that with the scientists, but they don't overwork it to where it's like, we have to save them. Logan is hell, like, he does not give two shits whether or not he has to kill a zombie. Like, he will dispatch them quickly because they are not useful to his research anymore.
I also kind of feel like, well, because they're disposable. They're lab rats. That's all he sees them as, which is a shame, because it's like, dude, and I'm not one of those who's, like, all kumbaya about it. Like, if it was a zombie apocalypse, I would probably be, like, Vulcan rational and practical about things.
Yeah.
To be like, well, they're dead. There's literally nothing we can fucking do. So it's survive or die. And so, but there's still that part of me that's like, listen, man, like, you're to Frankenstein. You have to, like, if he's figuring out that there's still a touch of humanity to some of these creatures, at some point you gotta stop thinking they're lab rats.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. Like, he treats Bub like a puppy.
Yeah. Or, and, like, some of the other zombies that he's dealing with, and one of them throws the operating table.
Yeah, he's like, think about what you've done.
Yeah, he's like, you're going to sit there in the dark and just think about it. Go ahead. Think about it. And he shuts it off like a little child. I was like, that's really...
He just put him in time out.
He did. So I was like, that's really funny, but it's then, like, when he turns around and he's explaining things to Sarah, and the zombie that, you know, starts to come off of the operating table, and all the guts fall out, and then he ends he just hits it with a drill and just ends that zombie, like, right then and there. I'm like, well damn, that there was no... Just, there was no humanity behind that. And like you said, it was very much, oh, you're just an experiment.
It's failure.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those, like, it's a greater loss, but it's for a greater good. And it's and a lot of times, like, when to actually get into Logan's stuff, when he is experimenting, he's not just experimenting on, you know, just the zombies themselves. He's actually, like, any of the soldiers that die, he's mm-hmm. been sneaking their bodies in because they're a lot fresher.
Which is such a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
This one's fresher.
Well, and because he's like, well, most of the corpses that he's been getting have probably been dead for...
God knows.
As you said, maybe months, maybe years. A lot of the zombies in this film, because, you know, Tom Savini actually had a budget and he actually had a crew. He actually had...
Well, there was a bigger budget, I think, and then... It ended up getting cut in half.
Well, in Dawn of the Dead, it was just him and an assistant that was doing the main makeups. Mm-hmm. And then he had a bunch of just people that volunteered mm-hmm. to just do the gray paint on all the other zombies. In this one, it was, as you said, the guys that basically formed KMB later on. So, I mean, these are like high-end, skilled...
They're still training, but they're getting there.
No, but I mean, but even then, it's like, for what they did, and like, this is the start of what would be for really, like, crazy good special effects. And that was the thing, was like, a lot of the zombies, they were definitely, they just had that rotting feel to them. They weren't great.
Yeah, the makeups looked great.
Yeah. They
especially compared to Dawn.
Yeah, especially compared to Dawn. Like, 100%. So, I mean, there was a couple of them that maybe still looked a little bit goofy.
The mask.
But, yeah, but that was the thing, was they amped it up so much better. And this is kind of where I would feel is the start of where the zombies, like, that look that we know as a zombie today. Like, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, Walking Dead. I mean, I know that's Greg Nicotero, but it's like that kind of just rotting corpse walking type of thing. But with Logan, that scene where he's got Cooper and it turns out, like, Sarah figures out, like, oh, that's Major Cooper. I thought he was buried. And then Logan tells her, like, oh, no, they buried a zombie corpse instead.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Well, the crazy thing is, like, so it's just a body and Cooper Logan is trying to figure out if the functions would still work if the body is dead or what have you.
And he cut off Cooper's face.
Cooper's like, he just left.
He's a brain and a neck.
So it was like, it was really crazy. But the funny thing for that, for me, speaking back to the makeup design for that, that is a practical man. And he's laying down, but then his head
is in a hole,
and he's like sitting there for just hours while they do that shit where he can just lift up his arms just to get it going. I was like, that's so, it's one, that's brutal, but two, it was just, and I think there was the guy that they had in there, I guess he would go to Savini and he goes, oh, like kind of eager, like, I want to do something. And then Savini's like, hey, I got something for you to do.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to put your head in a hole. It's just, you enjoy that one there, Chucko. But that was so I like that with Logan, where he would constantly use fresh parts, and he didn't have that, like, I think Logan was also just gone. He was just, I guess, not necessarily tired, but he was just too, he went on this insane, and it was a very fitting name to call him Dr. Frankenstein. When I heard that, I was like, I got that crazed, like, I have to do this, I'm gonna, you know, put body parts together so I can create life, and there's this end goal and all that stuff. So Logan, it worked for me because he was like, I love John and McDermott, but Logan was probably one of my I guess I kind of lump him in with Bub, but I loved him because he really added that layer of, I'm trying to do something different than just solve it. He's like, I don't want to solve this thing. I want to make it so that we could survive. And in doing that, it was weird because at that point, you also saw that there was butting heads from the science team, where Logan was just off doing his own thing, and the other two scientists only got the information that of what he was doing when they just showed up to say, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, he wasn't relaying a whole lot of information to the people he was supposed to be working with, which was... I didn't like him. I know he's supposed to be a villain, like, a kind of a villainy type of thing, but he was very mustache twirly, and I wasn't a fan of that. And the actor just wasn't very good.
What?
And the line delivery.
What are you talking about?
Because in some lines, in some spots, when he was talking, he would talk like this. And yep. Mm-hmm. And then he would nod his head and do the big crazy eye. It was just...
Oh my God, I love that.
It was stupid. And it, I was...
I like, absolutely loved it. Oh
no,
my God.
No, because it wasn't...
Ridiculous.
No. It was like an over-the-top caricature of, I'm going crazy. And it's like, no, dude, there's better ways to do this. Come on.
There was I have to disagree with you on it because for him, it's, I liked his delivery on the character because it made it so that, yeah, I could kind of see where he used to be, like what he was as a scientist, as a researcher. And then it's like, but as this pandemic and everything is just progressed on, he may have started off at this whole thing of trying to find the cure, but then failed. And then it just kind of reverted back into just going crazy. And then it became this thing of, oh, we could, they're just us. And he saw a little glimpse of something that he could bring up. Now, as far as like his delivery and things, that one scene when he comes in and Rhodes is screaming at everybody and telling them like, I'm the fucking guy now. You gotta listen to me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he comes in and says, oh, well, you don't have enough bullets for all of us. The zombies outnumber us 400-1. It's where are you going
to
go?
1,000-1.
It's still like, I mean, it just outnumbers us. So he's like, you can't shoot them all. You can't do this. And he basically talks Rhodes down. Like, he's like, there's nothing Rhodes can do because he just can over-talk him. And the crazy bit that he delivers when he does that, the eye thing that you just said that he did, I could see where it's like he's breaking and he can't get away from his work. And I mean, he's always covered in blood and he's, and you can see like on his hands, he's got dry blood. So he's just sitting in it. And then when he ends up going,
you could tell just by looking at his jacket.
Oh yeah. And then when Sarah and Fisher come in and they're seeing the demonstration of Bub, he's talking about his father. And you could tell, like, there was a piece of his life that he was missing. And it gave a little bit extra into that, well, my father said I would never make any money in research and I would never do anything and just kind of it was a waste. And now it's like what he's doing is going to help the world and what have you. And he just kind of went on that little tangent. But then there was another little piece where he was talking about his mother in a tape recorder.
Yeah, that was,
that was like
out of fucking nowhere.
So, and I was like, one, why would you record that? And then two, it was, but you could tell, like, Logan has completely snapped. Even though he's a brilliant man, it's, like I said, it goes into that Frankenstein-esque insanity and that drive. And it was just, it became too much. And then when Rhodes finds out that he's like, oh, you're feeding these fuckers my men and all this other.
Well, yeah, you know, then Rhodes loses it and kills Frankenstein outright.
Yeah.
Logan,
for me, was, like, probably third favorite out of the group of non-zombies. Just because he just does a great job of kind of delivering that little piece of story of for the zombies and just how their development is, and maybe just giving something other than just they're just dead. And especially in this movie that is completely bleak. It is a dark and just depressing movie, being just sheltered in this thing and just having this, he just kind of has this optimism about it where he's just like, this is going to work and we're going to get better and we're going to do this when nobody else feels that way. He's the only person that has some type of drive when even the other two scientists, they're breaking. They don't want to do this anymore. Like, Sarah is trying her hardest, but even though I don't even know exactly what her research was, except for the finding the cure, you only see her working on it maybe little bits at a time.
No, she was too busy following everybody else around.
Yeah.
I think what this movie does well is it touches on ideas very well. It brings up some interesting questions in terms of what happens when humanity starts to splinter. There are a lot of ethics questions raised with what Frankenstein is doing. You know, it's okay, well, technically these are cadavers, but they're still alive. So where does this fall ethically in terms of medicine and science and those sorts of things?
And he even mentions that, too, where he's like, oh, they're living. Well, maybe they're not. I don't know. We'll see. Because it's like, yeah. Okay.
So, Day of the Dead does a pretty good job of touching on all of those, like, those questions. What it doesn't do is a very good job of particularly fleshing out any of the answers. The dialogue's not great. I don't think the character work is very good. Outside of, like I mentioned before, outside of a couple of them, they're really just one-dimensional. I'm never going to be a fan of these movies. My dad was a big Romero fan. I remember catching Night of the Living Dead a bunch. But this original trilogy, I am never going to be a fan of. I have zero desire to ever watch them ever again. I really don't have a whole lot more to say because, honestly, it bored me for the most part. It bored me. I'm just going to give my skull rating because it's going to be the same across the board. I have nothing else to add to this conversation because, frankly, I find this movie incredibly boring. The ending comes out of nowhere and it ends in a hurry. I literally have nothing else. Outside of, yes, Bub's a bright spot and Sarah was mostly useful for a change. Like, we actually had a female protagonist in one of these Romero movies who was sort of kind of useful. So, this movie's like a 1.7. It's boring. I don't like it. I will never be a Romero fan. I don't get the hype behind Romero. I don't get the hype behind zombie movies. I don't think I ever will. And that's the long and the short of it. Like, that's just where I am. I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen Land of the Dead since it came out. Maybe I'll have warmer feelings towards that one. But nope. This original...
You're not gonna have warm feelings towards that one. I guarantee it.
But this original trilogy, I find it frustrating. I find it annoying. I'm not getting, at least with the worst of the Halloween stuff we just did, like, at least there was some twisted enjoyment out of Resurrection because of some of the stupid. Like, this is just, it's a chore to get through these movies. Like, I get how you felt that way about some of the Halloween ones and some of the other ones that we've watched, but this was a lot. So, this was, what is it, 1.7? It is what it is, and I'm glad I don't really have to ever watch it again.
Yeah, and that's where, again, we are on completely different spectrums of this thing. Because, for me, I watched this movie 5 times this week. I love this movie. If I'm going to give my skull rating, I gave this goddamn thing a 4.5. It is high on my list. It is one of my favorite zombie films. It's like Shaun of the Dead, Train to Busan, and now Day of the Dead. Like, it is absolutely one of my favorites. The fact that, yeah, I can definitely see where, like, Night of the Living Dead, it has its charm because it's got that old black and white feel to it and old school horror movie, you know, kind of universal and Ben and all that stuff. But once you get into Dawn of the Dead, yeah, I see that argument where I don't believe it's one of the best zombie movies ever. Definitely has its charm, and I can see where Romero may have was trying to go with the story. But yes, maybe a little bit slower, maybe a little bit boring, all that good stuff.
And that's the thing, is I don't particularly mind. I'm fine with slow burn movies. Like, you can go back and listen to a bunch of episodes of stuff like Rosemary's Baby and Things Beautiful. I really thoroughly enjoy it. I don't even mind the idea of people in rooms talking. Most of this Day of the Dead, this movie, was people in rooms talking. But it was mostly
yelling.
People in rooms shrieking at each other about stupid shit. And it's just, and we're going nowhere and we're spinning our wheels. So, like, it has nothing to do, it's nothing is moving the story along.
Now, with Day of the Dead, though, I liked it so much more because, one, you have two groups of people that are in this isolated area that are conflicting with each other, and it's just constant bashing. There's no, like, you're trying to figure out how you're going to either get out of that situation or make that situation better, and it always seems like it, like I said, it's just a very dark and bleak kind of mood because you also know that outside of those walls, it's just chaos. And it's just, there's nothing. They've gone up and down the coast, 100 miles back and forth, and for months, just nothing. It's just corpses everywhere. And it's a very...
You need to check the redneck neighborhoods. I bet you they're thriving.
Probably. So, I mean, that was the thing, was like, because it is very dark and bleak and it's just chaos, it really makes the movie much, much better for me. On top of Tom Savini actually having a plan and a budget and just a lot more production, the special effects take this movie just over and above and beyond. I think one of my favorite kills is, I mean, it should be for everybody else, is Captain Rhodes. So the great thing is, like, when he's being pulled apart, fun facts about that is, I guess they had 5 pounds of meat that was in this freezer, and mm-hmm. they were doing all the, shooting above ground. And I guess somebody unplugged the freezer, and so all the meat went rotten. Mm. And that's the meat that they used in Rhodes. And so there's, like, just shots of him just gagging and just about to heave just because he had to sit there, and he's in this hole. He can't go anywhere. And on top of that, all the zombies had to, like, play in it. They had to rip him open and then just start going to town. Some of them, I don't think they, for the shots that they used of the zombies eating him, they used that meat. If they did, that's fucking cruel. But,
because those are all choices the extras made. They didn't tell them to eat any of it.
No. Oh, and then there's, like, shots, like, of them filming it after they say cut. There's, like, the zombie actors, like, trying to wave away the smell. Like, it's like, that's terrible. That just seeing that where he split apart and then Rhodes screaming choke on him, mm-hmm. God, how fucking satisfying is that? Like, you can't have a better death scene.
It's not quite as satisfying as Bub shooting Rhodes down to allow the zombie horde to get him and then saluting him at the end.
Yeah, and that was that. And Bub, as we said, is the highlight of this film. He is the A+ gold star.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said to everybody that has watched this film, if you do not salute when Bub salutes, I have no respect for you. It's like whenever that
you
fucking
salute that goddamn zombie.
You salute that fucking zombie every time. But it's just like, it's, I love that when Logan is playing with the phone. And he does the thing where it's like, oh, say hello, Aunt Alicia. Say hello, Aunt Alicia. And then he's like, it's like, oh, so cute. But then when Rhodes does the whole thing of pointing the gun at him, and then Bub does a salute and Rhodes doesn't want to do it back to him. There's that whole thing. It's a really cool little shot. And then comes back to him, but it's just a big fuck you, sir, type of thing. when he gives the, he shoots him and then boop.
And then Bub's sequel. This is what happened to Bub after he got out of that bunker.
Yeah.
Watch the movie Fido.
I forgot about Fido. That's a good one. But I actually wanted to see maybe like even if it was like a comic book, I kind of wanted to see like a story of like maybe what happened to Bub, because they took that concept and then it turns into Land of the Dead. And that was one thing that I do love about Romero's movies, is that there is little ideas that he takes and then puts it into the next film, and it kind of expands on
that. There's a continuity because he's building a universe, and so Bub turns into Big Daddy.
Basically, yeah.
So we just take the Bub idea, expand it out, we get Big Daddy, and then I've never seen Survival or Diary of the Dead, so I don't fucking know.
I started to, because I wanted to try and get ahead of it, and I was just like, you're going to have fun. If you don't like these, you're going to have fun with them. Guarantee them. Mm. Because they're probably the weakest of the films. But yeah, I mean, for this one, like I said, I'm giving this a 4.5. It's one of my all-time... It's one of my top three of the all-time zombie movies. Like, it's just... It hits all my buttons. I mean, yes, granted... There's scenes where the fucking soldier, I think it was Rickles, he's fucking shooting the shit out of zombies, and then his gun shows up. There's no fucking bullets in the thing. Like, he's not loaded. Like, it's just an empty vessel. Like, I understand there's shit like that. And I was actually very happy that your boy, that's a military man, saw that scene, because I knew that was going to happen. I've seen this so many times.
He turned to me, and he's like, did you see the gun wasn't loaded? And I said, no, because it was being fired. And he's like, hang on a minute. And he pauses it, he rewinds it a minute, and he looks back, and then he freeze frames. Like, he pauses it again. He goes, the fucking gun's not loaded.
No, there's nothing in
it. And then he starts cracking up. He's like, how did they miss that? The gun is still firing, but there's no... You could see the empty spot where the magazine's supposed to go in. Yeah. And I'm like,
I've seen that so many times. I mean, I've watched this movie, like, countless times. Like, I mean, from all the marathons that I would have with my buddy, and it was just, that was just one scene that just always cracked me up. It was just, it's kind of like the stormtrooper walking into the frame and smacking his head on the door. Like, it's just dumb. It's just like, why would you even keep it in there or shoot it or show it? And it's like, budget. But it was still one of those things where I tried not to let any of those little practical mess ups ruin the film because of the whole grand scheme of what the story was playing out. I thought it was great. There were things that, again, every film's gonna have its thing, but for this one, it's probably my all-time favorite out of the Dead series. So, I also, just to make sure that I did my due diligence,
okay,
I went and I watched the, I guess, quote-unquote Finger Wiggles remakes of Day of the Dead. I started watching the one, I believe it was in 2004.
Well, it was Day of the Dead remake-ish, and then there was Bloodline, which was supposed to be a sequel.
So, we're not going to bother with those, because they're not a Romero thing. I know that everyone says, oh, hey, but you guys did the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead. It's like, it was good. We like that one.
Well, also, we did that well before we decided to do this. That was almost four years ago.
So, the first Day of the Dead remake isn't actually a remake. It doesn't have anything to do with this film whatsoever. The zombies, from what I got out of it, that once you're bitten, you like instantly turn and you like rot, and it's just they kind of take that zombie from Zack Snyder's Day of the Dead and kind of put it into this, but the story is just bleh, doesn't matter. So yeah, we won't matter with those. Bloodline was interesting because it actually felt like it was more like this film, but they added the twist where there was this like patient zero zombie who could actually withstand the zombie like infection, but he was still living. So he still rotted and became a zombie, but he had like his living organs, basically. It was weird. So they were trying to, you know, get his blood to see if they could get a vaccine or something to, like, a cure. But it was, right. The whole story is just fucking bananas. So, yeah.
I'm about to make a liar out of you.
Yeah?
Yeah, because, well, we're not doing those Day of the Dead offshoots because they're not Romero movies. Next week, we're going to do the Night of the Living Dead remake, which is also not a Romero movie.
However, I'm going to backtrack your making a liar out of me because it is a Romero movie because George Romero worked with Tom Savini on the remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so it was a Romero movie. He wanted to remake it because they made no money on the Night of the Living Dead when it first got
forgot to fucking copyright it or whatever. Yeah.
So he's like, I wanted to make money for people, so he wanted to remake it. But he didn't want to put his stamp on it, and he found somebody else to do it that was also within his...
Well, he's within the sphere. Exactly. Tom Savini was his buddy and his protege, so...
Yeah, so, boom! Mic drop. Fist pump.
I don't care.
Yeah!
Do you feel good about yourself?
A little bit. Yeah, just dropping some...
You want a cookie?
Do you have one?
Yeah, can we wrap this up?
Yeah, let's do it. So, 1.7 out of you, 4.5 out of me. We got Night of the Living Dead ready to go. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I've heard that this Barbara is leaps and bounds better than whatever the fuck that was in Romero's movie.
And Tony Todd. We like Tony Todd.
We do like Tony.
This is before Candyman, too.
All right, I'll go in with an open mind. We have a better Barbara and Tony Todd. Fine.
Tom Savini. Come on. It's a win-win, everybody.
Yeah, I'll make up my mind on that later.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that.
But in the meantime, subscribe and we'll drop in your favorite podcatcher on Tuesdays. Join us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Creepin' It Real. You can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com if you have any show suggestions. And then one last slutty reminder to buy the merch at creepinitreal.redbubble.com and go stuff your best friend's stocking. Or, well,
that sounded really dirty.
Phrasing, huh? Phrasing.
That's what she said.
Any Archer fans out there? Phrasing. So we're just gonna gloss right over that and wrap this
I'm
up.
I'm not.
I've been Mistress Meg.
I've been Lunchbox.
And you want to go ahead and do your Barry White impression closeout?
Oh, my darling, I can't get enough of zombies, baby.